to episode 414 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. And here at the Unpopular Podcast, I'm not going to ask you to agree with me. I'm asking you to hear me out. Let me paint a scenario for you to start this episode. Imagine you're at your job and you have probably the best quarter or best year of your working life at this job. Your contributions to the job brings an exceeding amount of profit for your job. You're pretty much essentially the best worker, and you've had the best year. And at the end of it, at the end of the year, obviously you have your meetings, you have your quarterly meetings, and at your end of year meeting, you've had the best year of your career. You've had the best year of your working career. You brought the franchise its most profitable year. You're probably expecting, you know, a pay raise, increase, something. And they essentially ask you to take a pay cut. After everything I just laid out, they essentially ask you to take a pay cut. The question is, do you do it or not? You see, I think that us as fans and a lot of people, we have a hard time understanding and compartmentalizing the fact that sports is a business. And obviously, these athletes, these players are making an exorbitant amount of money, more than the average person. But it's still a business. And a lot of things that pertain to, for lack of a better term, lower class businesses. And when I say lower class, I mean obviously the NFL and stuff are probably at a higher class. But lower tier, lower paid businesses, those practices still apply. So in your world, in your business, why would you accept a pay cut after you had the best statistical career at your job? And you were you were a big part of why your job saw the most success of that year. You see, I see a lot of people are on the fence about Legarius Sneed. Legarius Sneed was the cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was one of the most important pieces to this Kansas City Chiefs team that ultimately won a Super Bowl last year. Now, let's not get it confused. I'm not saying he was the most important piece. What I'm saying is his contributions led directly to a Super Bowl. If it wasn't for the defensive play of him and Chris Jones, they probably would not be a Super Bowl champion. And you see, usually after Super Bowls, and especially when your contract is up, you're expected and you're hoping that the team that you helped along the way find success that year pays you handsomely. Now, I understand that some teams can't. But if your team, if your job is able to pay you handsomely for your services, wouldn't you expect that? Now, no, the Kansas City Chiefs didn't essentially ask Legarius Sneed for a pay cut. But what they did do was franchise tag him. They could have worked out a deal, but obviously they were unable to. And now he was traded to the Tennessee Titans. You hear ungrateful, you hear unreasonable when we talk about money. And in sports, people have such a hard time understanding that. While yes, there's you watch these people, they make much more money than us. It's still a job. And I have no issue with L'Jarius Sneed saying, hey, this is what I'm worth and this is what I'm going to accept. If not, trade me. And that's what they did. You see a lot of people in my comments, you see a lot of people that's commenting about this on social media that has a lot to say about this. Now, obviously, L'Jarius Sneed chose the money over success. Because I don't see an avenue where the Tennessee Titans are good enough next year to ultimately compete for Super Bowl. Actually, I don't see them good in the next few years competing for Super Bowl. I mean, I just don't see it in Will Levis. But that's not an issue either. And I think especially somebody that's experienced success in their field, I think it's still frowned upon. People still frown upon people going for money over success that they've already seen, which then brings me back to the quote-unquote real world. Wouldn't you go to a different job if they offered you more money? Like, don't get me wrong. I understand you're still doing what you love to do, but if you worked at one company and another company offered you more money, wouldn't you go to that company? Even if that company doesn't have the same amount of success as the company you're leaving, but they're willing to pay you more money. I think we have to understand that while we have to look at this as still a business, because it is. The league is a business, and these players have to do what's best for them. I say this all the time. These teams are obviously going to do what's best for them. The players have to look out for themselves. And that's just so interesting. A fan base that loves, I'm not saying it's the whole entire fan base, but a fan base that loves L'Jarius Sneed and the Kansas City Chiefs, I see a lot of people turn him quickly because he chose money over long-term success. As far as accolades, Super Bowls, you know what I mean? You see a lot of people poking at his stats. You know, only had 60 solo tackles, only had 2 interceptions last year. But L'Jarius Sneed was one of those people, or is one of those people, that his impact is not really based on numbers. You can look on the field and understand that he's one of the most important, one of the best players that was on the Kansas City Chiefs last year. And there is no Super Bowl if it wasn't for L'Jarius Sneed, at least playing a big part. So I say congratulations to him. Definitely, definitely deserved. I think another reason why people are up in arms and upset about this is because they understand what last year looked like for the Kansas City Chiefs and how important that defense was, especially when the offense was in uncertain waters, I guess you can say. And a lot of people are questioning, is this it for, you know, losing L'Jarius Sneed? Is Kansas City still a Super Bowl champion or Super Bowl caliber team? And my response to that is, if you have number 15, you're a Super Bowl caliber team. But I will say this. There comes a point where you have to, I'm not saying that the Chiefs are not a Super Bowl caliber team. I'm not saying that they're going to be a trash team. But what I'm saying is you want to help your star player as much as possible. Even if they are the great Patrick Mahomes. And I'm not taking anything away from Patrick Mahomes. He is exceptional at football. But as we saw last year, football is the ultimate team sport. If one unit is bad, but another one is great, usually you don't win. And this is going to be a huge blow for the Kansas City Chiefs because of how important L'Jarius Sneed was. And again, I'm not saying that they're not, they still have Chris Jones, and I think he was the most important defensive player on the team. So I'm not gonna say that they're just terrible now, and they still have, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, and I know they just got Marquise Brown. So I'm not saying that they're trash, but what I'm saying is you don't want to lose these big pieces because they don't, I mean, you want to make it easier for your star player. And having L'Jarius Sneed on the team definitely makes it easier. But I'm not going to go as far as saying that, the Kansas City Chiefs are not a Super Bowl caliber team. That's, if you have number 15 at the helm, you're a Super Bowl caliber team, hands down. Do y'all remember when Calvin Ridley got in trouble for gambling? And what I said was the reason why the NFL cracked down so hard on him. Pause. Integrity is such a huge thing as far as how you view sports. Whatever league you're watching, whether that's NBA, NFL, MLB, the last thing that that company wants, or that organization, that league wants, is for the integrity of the game to be in question. Which is why I said that they will crack down much harder on betting and gambling than domestic violence. Domestic violence is a personal issue. It's not a league issue. In their eyes, gambling and having the integrity of the game at jeopardy is much more important for them, which is why they crack down so hard on sports betting. Calvin Ridley was probably, well, we remember Pete Rose. That was probably the most famous name in this type of instance. But Shohei Ohtani has had a long week with gambling allegations, debt allegations, his interpreter. The issue that I have with, first and foremost, let me say, I don't know what's true and what's false. Obviously, I wasn't there. Obviously, I am just a spectator, just like everyone else. I don't know the ins and outs. You know, I'm only getting the information that is given. But one of the reasons why I'm smelling a tad bit of lies is because they have not, and when I mean they, I mean the Dodgers, the MLB, Shohei Ohtani's camp, they have not been able to maintain a straight story this entire time. The reason for all this has changed about 3 or 4 times in a span of a week. At first, it was like a debt that Shohei Ohtani had to pay for his friend. Then the interpreter had nothing to do with it, didn't know nothing about it. Shohei Ohtani didn't know anything about it. Then it was, oh, well, the interpreter was stealing massive amount of money from Ohtani that Ohtani didn't know. Now the interpreter says he had nothing to do with it. Actually, it wasn't me at all. And Shohei Ohtani has it. I understand that the organizations are trying to stay face, you know, keep face. I understand that if this is what it looks like it is a terrible look, not only for the MLB, but a terrible look for Ohtani, because essentially your best player was caught gambling, whether that's on MLB games, whether that's in other sports, he was caught gambling. And what sports don't like is their athletes gambling. Of course, you can gamble on the sport, but the athletes, they don't want that because, again, it hurts the integrity of the game. What I'm saying is, man, Dodgers, MLB, get the story straight. Because right now, this story is going all over the place. Now, he said he hasn't done it. He said he had nothing to do with it. And, hey, just because I don't believe him doesn't mean it's not true. But one of the reasons why I wanted to actually discuss this a little bit is because my question is, this is the dark side when you open up and when you lean so heavily into sports betting. Right here. Oh, and Jonte Porter for the Toronto Raptors is under investigation from the NBA for actively sports betting on his games. You see, at the end of the day, you obviously see that these players, and I'm not exactly putting Ohtani in this, but I'm just saying in general, there have been players, there have been multiple players for the NFL, but these players are willing to put their livelihoods in jeopardy for some money. For the life of me, I will never understand how a player can jeopardize, Jonte Porter. He jeopardized millions upon millions upon millions of dollars playing the game of basketball for a $1.4 million bet. Calvin Ridley jeopardized millions and lost millions for like a $1,000 or like thousands of dollar bet. Homie at Florida, Clemson or something, that was caught with like hundreds of bets. This is the floodgates that could open when you lean so heavily into sports gambling, whether that's DraftKings, whether that's FanDuel. And I'm not blaming these organizations. What I'm saying is, understand that what you lose is much, much, much more valuable than what you could gain. Because think about it. What if this comes out that Shohei Ohtani is actually lying? Which it looks like there is some lying somewhere. Not only does that tarnish his name, that tarnishes the Dodgers' name, that tarnishes the MLB's name. Because he is essentially the face of the MLB right now. All I'm saying is, man, understand what you're willing to lose. If you're willing to give up essentially your career for a couple of dollars, then go right ahead. But I personally, someone that's not making millions upon millions of dollars, don't think it's worth it. Especially when you're jeopardizing something that you worked your whole life for. This Jonte Porter ain't a star. So there's a good chance that if he is found guilty, there is a shot that he will never play in the NBA again. Was $1.2 million really worth it? Now, obviously, Shohei Ohtani isn't on that level. He's obviously a level much, much, much higher. But this is when you lean so heavily on FanDuel and sports betting, this is the risk that you run. again, the only reason why I kind of question what's going on with the Shohei Ohtani is because this story has changed 4 to 5 times in the span of a week. And usually if there's truth involved somewhere, it usually stays the same. That's all I'm saying. So just be careful, man. Just be careful. Let's move forward. We are officially in what, the Sweet 16 of both the men's and women's March Madness. And I'm going to talk about some takeaways from the men's and the women's, but I want to start with the women's because there is something that is irritating me watching the women's game. And again, I'm not here poo-pooing anybody. I'm not talking about anybody negatively. I'm just thinking about things that possibly I would like to see change. Going into March Madness, I said that it's very rare that you see huge upsets in the first few rounds. It's very rare that you see upsets in general because while yes, the field is stacked, there are some incredible women teams. There's some incredible teams in general, but on the women's side right now, there are some incredible teams. Like there's not much of a gap between UConn women's and UCLA women's. So you don't really see much upset. However, another reason why you don't see a lot of upset is because the one seeds. And that is kind of what I want to focus on. I don't know if it's because of money. I'm sure somebody knows. And somebody will give my comments and tell me exactly why. But why is it that the number one seeds or the higher ranked seeds get a home court game until Sweet 16? I understand that you work the entire regular season to get a record to essentially be a number one seed for whatever reason you're put in. But don't you think it's an extremely competitive disadvantage to an away team that you're playing in March Madness on another team's court? Like, I don't understand why there can't be a neutral site. Now, for people that will say, well, then what's the point of fighting for a one seed? Okay. Well, if you want to look to the men's side, I think that, look at UConn and UConn men's and North Carolina men's. Both of them are one seeds in their region. UConn gets the advantage of playing in Brooklyn, which is about 2.5 hours from Connecticut. North Carolina is playing in Charlotte, which is about 1.5 hours to an hour from Chapel Hill. Still get the benefits of being a number one seed, but you're not, it's not, who do they have to play? It's not Alabama having to come and play in Chapel Hill, or it's not Michigan State having to come play in Chapel Hill, or it's not, I don't know, let's just say Grand Canyon or something, have to go to Connecticut to play. To me, you're already, the advantage is you're a one seed, you're a better seed. Why am I watching South Carolina just completely destroy North Carolina in South Carolina as far as on their home court? Why can't they play, I don't know, at Clemson or something? Well, look, all I'm saying is this, man, and I'm not trying to take away from anyone. I think that, you know, the women see or the one sees and wherever you were seated, you definitely worked for that advantage. But we've already expressed that there's a lack of upsets. And I'm not saying that we're playing for an upset, but that Aquinas is kept. That's why a lot of people watch, because they want to see upsets. Don't you think it would make the game better? Now, I don't know if it's finances. I don't know what it is. But don't you think it'll make the game better if, kind of like the men's side, is a neutral site? And if you want to reward the one seeds from being one seeds, then let them play in their state, just not at their home. Like, it just, man, I just think that it's a competitive advantage for a one seed, especially when you're dealing with a one seed like Iowa, or you're dealing with a one seed. Oh, I'm glad I said that. Did you see that Iowa-West Virginia game? And did you see how many calls that were questionable that could have been 50-50? Did you see how many calls went to Iowa because they were at home? Now, again, I'm not saying anyone was cheating. I'm not saying any of that. But what I'm saying is that is the risk that you run. There's a lot of people questioning a lot of the calls at the end of the Iowa-West Virginia game. And I'm almost sure that some of those calls may not have been made, or some of those calls could have been differently that were 50-50 if it was on a neutral site. Now, we have seen some incredible games. We have seen some fantastic finishes, and we've seen some upsets. I mean, Ohio State lost to Duke. Shouts out to Duke. They beat Ohio State. So I'm not saying that, you know, you just get a huge advantage playing at home. But when you're a one seed or when you're at home, it is an advantage. So I just don't understand why it can't be a neutral site game, just like the men's side. Maybe it's finances. I don't know. But that's playing into why we don't see a lot of upsets, because it's very hard upsetting somebody, especially in the tournament, when they're at home, when all they got to do is wake up from their dorm or wake up from their apartment and walk to the game or walk to the arena. What are we doing? Man. But I guess I'm not. I started negatively. I'll end on a positive note. There has been some incredible games. And, yeah, my women's bracket was a little more intact until, like, Ohio State lost. But my brackets have been busted. And I think that is, like, a lot of people are upset because there's money involved in a lot of instances. But I just think it's interesting, and I think it's fascinating to see, you know, how these games turn out, the game plans, or, you know, how one team stops another team, or, well, it's been great. We've seen some incredible individual play. I know UConn and Paige Beckers. Paige Beckers has been incredible, and this is a year after, you know, losing her entire season to an ACL tear. Of course, South Carolina, God, they dismantled North Carolina, and I don't remember the first team they played, but Jesus Christ. Yo, North Carolina is not a bad team. Like, North Carolina is, I think they were an eighth seed. Like, they are a pretty good team, and when they played up against South Carolina, they looked like, it looked like, one looked like a JV team, the other one looked like a varsity team. That's just how it looked. It's just, shouts out to Tennessee. They did lose, but, oh man, I forgot her name. She was going crazy. And that mom, that one of her daughters played for UNC, the other one played for Tennessee, I believe. It's always great, the stories that, you know, the NCAA and March Madness wraps their hand around, or wraps their arms around. I think it's great. We've seen some incredible basketball. Some incredible basketball. Should I talk about this? I'll talk about it a little bit. A big story that dropped yesterday was about the Utah women's basketball team. and they experienced racism playing, you know, in March Madness, and it was so fierce and it was so thick that they had to essentially move hotels because of the racial profiling and just the just what they were going through and how it obviously affected them, which unfortunately they lost. This is a reminder for people that ever forgot that racism is still for sure alive. And it doesn't matter how good you dribble a basketball, doesn't matter how good you shoot a basketball, doesn't matter how far you can throw a football, doesn't matter how hard and how far you can hit a baseball. People are always, some people, racists, are going to view you in a certain type of light. It doesn't matter how good sport you are. It is unfortunate that we are still in a time where people can be viewed as less than just because of features that they didn't ask for, that they didn't pick, that they essentially had no say in having. And that obviously is the color of their skin. I pray for everyone that was involved as far as the Utah team. I pray for every race that was involved because, you know, racism just doesn't touch the people that it's directed to. It's usually a shotgun. It just touches everyone that's around. And it's unfortunate. But this is just yet another example that racism is still here to stay and still very, very prevalent. Very prevalent. And it's unfortunate that it seeped into the NCAA's magnum opus of the year, which is obviously March Madness. And the fact that there were people, obviously on the women's side, that didn't deserve this at all. But I wish nothing but the best for them. And whatever they experienced, obviously they didn't deserve. I'll say that. Dang, I didn't. Let's move forward. Let's move on to the men's side. And this isn't a segment of me I guess I'll say patting myself on the back. This is not what this is. What this is me acknowledging exactly what I thought. And just strictly sticking to basketball, obviously it's not just basketball, but in this conversation, injuries play a huge part in who determines or who is selected or who is representing their school in March. And injuries also affect how far you go. I talked about this when I was describing and discussing how I thought the men's bracket, the men's tournament was going to go. And as we've seen, it has played a major factor. It played a major factor on the winning side, and it played a major factor on the losing side. When I told you going into March, maybe not trust Kansas as much because their best scorer was not playing. He had a knee injury. He was dealing with a knee injury a couple weeks before, you know, the tournament even started, and they shut him down. Well, what do you know? They lost in the second round. I also said to keep a lookout on Marquette. Tyler Kolek was injured, and you didn't. Marquette is a completely different team with or without Tyler. And as we've seen, he's playing, and they find themselves in the Sweet 16. And honestly, it's very hard for me not to see them making it past NC State to at least the Sweet 16. Injuries play a part. And it's always going to play a part in sports. That's just as unfortunate as it is, that's just the name of the game. You can look at every Super Bowl. You can look at every NBA Finals in recent memory. There is injuries that have affected it, whether that's the teams that are in it or the teams that they have to play. I mean, just off the top of my head, what, 2 years ago when the Kansas City Chiefs made it to the Super Bowl, you can argue that the Chiefs should have made it if it wasn't for their offensive line being out. You know, like, same thing with the Eagles that year. The Eagles, if Brock Purdy and Christian McCaffrey and all their entire quarterback room wasn't out, you could have an argument that we would have saw the Kansas City Chiefs and or the Cincinnati Bengals and the 49ers playing. So injuries play a huge part in sports. And that's something that definitely we're seeing as far as, you know, one for the negative as far as Kansas and another one from Marquette in the positive. And there's a feeling. Like, you know when there's an upset, there's a feeling. Like, ah. For instance, I'll give you a perfect example. When Oakland beat Kentucky, there was think pieces galore after. Hell, I put my two cents in as far as, you know, the job security and if there should be a coaching change with John Calipari, because this is yet another year where they failed to meet expectations. I'm not saying win it all. What I'm saying is, at least you have one of the best teams in the nation. Maybe not go out the first weekend. Or the first week. But I also said that there is parity all throughout of college basketball, especially on the men's side. And don't be shocked if we see more upset than previously thought we would see. Now, there hasn't been too many upsets. I mean, the biggest upset, obviously, was, like I said, Oakland beating Kentucky. I know Yale beating Auburn was a huge upset. Yale being a 13 seed, Auburn being a 4 seed. NC State beating Texas Tech was a huge upset. But it doesn't feel like big upsets, you know, because, like I said, there is parity all throughout college basketball. And while people may not have thought about it, there's not much difference between Clemson and Baylor. And obviously we saw Clemson win. Clemson is a 6 seed now in the Sweet 16. You know, there's not much of a difference between South Carolina and Oregon. And we saw Oregon beat South Carolina. The only reason why you would call it an upset, obviously, is because of the rankings. But there isn't much of a difference between St. Mary's and Grand Canyon. Compared to the women's side, there is obviously a seismic difference between South Carolina and North Carolina, as we saw the other day. Yo, I hate to go back to that game, but yo, there was a point where they had them up by like 50 points. Mind you, this isn't the first game. This isn't the NIT. This isn't, you know, the first game of the tournament. This is an 8th seed down almost 50 to South Carolina. You don't really see, you're not going to see that much in the men's side, man. Because, again, the talent level is not as staggering as the rankings would suggest it to be. Oh, and the last thing I'm going to say about college basketball. Now, I know it's fun to pick upsets like I picked TCU to beat Utah State, extremely wrong. I picked McNeese to beat Gonzaga, extremely wrong. I picked, I was just hella off. I picked New Mexico to beat Clemson, obviously I was off. So, you know, this is a imperfect thing. I picked Drake to make a run. I don't know why I did that. And Drake they didn't get embarrassed, but they did lose to, you know, Washington State. The last thing I'm going to say is there seems like a clear cut number one. And obviously, UConn is the number one, but they seem like, they look like, they feel like the best team by a long shot, like by a country mile. It doesn't seem like anyone is in UConn's stratosphere right now. Now, yes, they haven't really, you know, when we look at UConn and when we talk about just their talent, obviously, Stinson is not on the same level as UConn. Northwestern, even though they're a 9 seed, they're not on the same level as UConn. Their first real test, in my opinion, is not going to come. Because I understand that, you know, UConn and San Diego State, that is the rematch of last year's national championship. But when we look at how UConn has played all year, and we look at how San Diego State has played all year, that's not much of a contest. It shouldn't be much of a contest. I don't see it as much of a contest. Honestly, I don't see... I think the if North Carolina makes it to the Final Four, that might be their first test. Because I look at Iowa and Illinois, and no offense to them, but there is a major size advantage that UConn has. So I guess this is the last thing I'm saying is I'm just giving myself props and saying that I indeed did not expected UConn to be this. I think Jay Will said it, man. They seem like a freight train to the national championship. They don't. If out of all these teams, man, like I understand, you know, Houston, all the number ones are still in there. And Purdue has looked incredible. Purdue looked good against Indiana or Utah State. They looked good against Grambling. I remember I said they were the weakest number one. I might be off on that one. And I actually had Utah State beating them. I was definitely wrong. But it just looks like what I feared, what I thought, looks to be true. It looks like UConn is just leaps and bounds better than everyone. And they're showing it. You know, I'm very interested in that. I'm very, very interested in that Houston Duke game. First of all, Duke has been incredible, and that is going to be a very interesting game. It's all offense against all defense, and I know that sounds crazy because Houston scored 100 points against Texas A&M, but Houston is known for having those letdowns as far as offensively. Defensively, they pretty much stay the same, but you're going up against a high-powered offense when everything is clicking in Duke. I'm very interested to see what happens with that Houston game. Very interested, but man, let me know what y'all, or there, obviously, if you look at all the graphics, there's not one perfect bracket. So let me know what percentage bracket you're in, or what your brackets are looking like, because mine was out of here. I picked FAU to beat West Northwestern. Obviously, they lost by 12. I should have known. I mean, again, I picked Oakland. I mean, I picked Kentucky to beat Oakland. That prop pretty much beat or destroyed everyone's bracket. So, yeah, let me know what you think. Let's move forward. Every year, there is new rules that are changed, that are implemented in the NFL. And every year, these new rules, these new changes always spark huge debate, huge topics. And this year, obviously, is no different. This year's big rule change was the banning of the hip drop tackle. Now, I completely understand both sides of this story. Both sides of this argument. And when I mean both sides, I completely understand the offensive side and I completely understand the defensive side. Let me first talk about the offensive side. Last year, you saw a couple people. Now, not everyone, obviously, but you saw a couple people that suffered season-ending injuries or season-altering injuries because of the hip drop tackle. This happens almost every single year. When you see someone hurt, tear their ACL, you see someone break an ankle, break a leg, and they'll always come out and say, would you rather have a, you know, when we're talking about hitting and tackling, would you rather be tackled high or would you rather be tackled low? And almost 9 times out of 10, they say low because, or no, they say high because they don't want to hurt their lower extremities, their legs, their ankles, their ACLs, their MCLs, their meniscus. I think us as consumers have to make up our minds about what is important. Because we scream that we love football. We scream that we love the violence, the sheer brutality of football. Yet and still, we in the same breath, we say we honestly care about these players' health. Because, don't get me wrong, this is going to change the way that tackling has to be done. But this move is honestly for the health of their players. I think when big situations like this happen, or when big swooping topics happen, that's the only time that fans really care about players' health. Like when the NFL was trying to crack down hard on concussions, that's the only time you really heard about, whoa, what are we doing? You know, the player's health is so important. Yet and still, there's still people that love the old way the game is played. And how people would not, like, get their heads knocked off. Or you see people, and this is, you see people go, well, this, you know, they're taking out the fun of the game. Now we're going to be playing, you know, flag football. Bruds, you're trying to preserve these people. Mind you, man, a lot of these, I don't know if you've ever broken anything. It just hurts. And there's a lot of times where you can break something and it never heals right. Like, it could be nerve damage. It could be, I'm not going to say permanently broke, but it can cause permanent damage. So in that instance, I get it. And I also get it in a defensive mindset because the game has leaned so heavily on the offense as far as an advantage because, again, I've said this before and I will say it again. These leagues, at the core of all of these leagues, they are a business. Means they are in the business of putting out the best product. And what is the best product? What gets the most views for the NFL? Touchdowns. Nobody wants to sit through a 7-3 game. They want to see a high-scoring game. So, of course, they're modeling their game around what people like to see. And that, as unfortunate as it is a disadvantage to the defense. Which is why you see the way the tackling, not just the hip tackling, but, you know, the penalties, the pass interferences. The game is leaning so heavily to the offense that it makes it almost impossible to play a clean game defensively. Because they have to adjust the way that they've been taught their entire life. They have to adjust much more than the offense has to adjust. And I get it, you know. I understand. I understand the frustration. It's just like, this is yet another quote-unquote advantage that you're taking away from the defense. But I would combat that by saying, if a hip drop tackle. Now, let me put an asterisk on this and say, obviously, I don't play football. I played football 1 year. I was not on the defense. So I'm not here being a guru and expert on football. That is not me. But what I will say is, as unfortunate as it is, just as much as they were able to adjust to every other rule change, this is a rule change that they have to adjust to. And that they will adjust to, because they are professional athletes. They are better than all of us at this. But I do understand the frustration. I truly, truly do. Because it's like, it's like, at what point are you going to help the defense? And it seems like a lot of these rules, hell, even the kickoff, is all about protecting the players, as well as the new kickoff rule. It's very hard to explain. I understood it better as when I saw the diagram. I know the XFL does it, but they're trying. I will say this, and this is my point of view. I understand trying desperately to make the game safer for your players. I think that is the most important thing that the brand should want to do, is make the sport safer for your athletes. While, yes, I understand that this is what people signed up for as far as a, lack of a better term, gladiatorial sport. I don't even think gladiatorial, but I just made it up. But you're playing such a brutal sport. Obviously, the people that play know what comes with it. But at the end of the day, you should try your hardest into trying to make it as safe as possible. But the only thing that I would say is, there's a very fine line between making it as safe as possible and, for lack of a better term, diluting the product. And making the product so lopsided that it essentially hurts its viewership and hurts its credibility. Because again, the game is leaned so heavily on the offensive side that it's almost impossible for a defensive player to adjust. They're going to have to do it, obviously, but it's hard for them. To the point where defense is almost becoming obsolete. Or let me say this. Let me not say obsolete. Let me back up. Defense is almost becoming impossible to play. Impossible to play when, and it's a fair playing field, because it's like, what do we do, you know? So I'm all for the league, every league, to make their league safe. But what I will say is, do not dilute the product just to push a safety thing, especially on a sport that you know you run, you know, is a dangerous sport. Again, let me say this again so people understand exactly what I'm saying. I'm all for making the game as safe as possible. These are people that we're talking about. And in a humanity sense, in a humane sense, I want them to be as safe as possible at their workplace. But just like I understand, just like they understand when they sign up to play, there is a level of violence that they're agreeing to. And I don't want, don't push the envelope so much on one side, which it seems like the NFL, which is what we're talking about, is doing. Don't push the envelope so much to one side that it essentially dilutes the product and it makes the product seem a bit unfair. So, yeah. I'm interested to see how defenses adjust to this, you know, because it's always crazy to see that something that players have been taught. Now, I don't know if they've been taught hip drop tackles, but what they have been taught is, yo, do whatever you can to get that running back, to get that offensive player on the ground, you know? So it's interesting, but we'll see. I wanted to address this before the show ended. I'm going to make this segment a little local, so bear with me, I guess. I don't know. Not everything needs a conspiracy theory. Not everything is a conspiracy. You know, when situations happen, when tragedies happen, it's almost sad to see where people's mind goes first. For people that didn't know, or for people that don't know, or didn't see social media, or didn't see CNN, or didn't see any news outlet, the Francis Scott Key Bridge, which is located in Baltimore, Maryland, collapsed. I think a ship that was carrying freight hit it, you know, collided with the bridge and ultimately collapsed the bridge. Now, luckily, there wasn't a lot of people on the bridge, and it was early enough that it wasn't a congested bridge, but there were people on the bridge. And as we speak, there are still people missing. As somebody from Maryland, I'm not from the Baltimore area, but I've been in the Baltimore area several times in my life, and I've been on that bridge countless times. So this impacts me. This hits home for me because this bridge is literally 35, 40 minutes away from my house. And to see people lose all their shred of humanity and keep talking about conspiracy this, conspiracy that, you see they blew up, like, bruh, I'm not telling you to not think what you want to think. I'm not saying that you're wrong for thinking what you want to think. But what I'm saying is, there's a time and a place, bruh, And that ain't it. This ain't the time or the place. There's still, there's, as we speak, six families at least that are still up in arms and is still up in the air about where their loved ones are. There are people that are dead. And you think that their family want to hear about some conspiracy theory? As the reason why their family member is unfortunately possibly not here anymore? What I'm saying is, man, I pray for everyone that was involved and everyone that was affected by this bridge falling. Again, this hits home for me because I've been on this bridge. At the time that the bridge was hit and it collapsed, I've been on that bridge at that time several times in my life. So there is a sense of it could have been me. But I pray for every single person that was involved in this. And I pray. My faith is strong. My faith in God is strong. My faith in God cannot be broken. So until there is confirmation, I think that everyone is missing. There is a shot that they are still alive. And I hope that they are still alive. Because I believe in God. But all I'm saying is, for people that's talking about this was it, for the conspiracy theory people, your opinion is important, just not to everyone. And there is a thing called read the room. Please read the room. I pray again for everyone that was affected by the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsing. There you have it. That's been today's episode of the Unpopular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want an Unpopular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I'm trying to get as many subscribers as possible, so anything can help. If you like the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. It definitely means a lot. Also, for all my DSP listeners, that's either SoundCloud, Apple Podcast, Spotify, please follow, please subscribe wherever you're listening. I understand that some people only watch on YouTube and some people only listen to DSPs. All of you guys are important to me. So wherever you get the Unpopular Podcast, please follow, please subscribe. Also, please follow the socials. Follow Instagram, follow TikTok. I post pretty much daily. That's where we can debate. That's where we can, you know, talk one-on-one. That's where you can tell me how much you don't agree with my takes, how much you do agree with my takes. Again, follow the socials. All the links in the description below. Definitely means a lot. And until next time, much love.